irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Sunday night of Max and Friends. Well, if it's your first time joining us, where have you been over the 11 years? I'm here like every Sunday night waiting for you all. Tweet me at Max Tucci. Hit me up on Twitter at Max Tucci. Instagram me at Max Tucci Radio. Be part of the show. You're my co-host, so be part of it. I love you all for tuning in, and I'm grateful for each and every one of you because without you, there's just Max and no friends, so it's kind of boring. But with all of you, it makes amazing radio. So thank you all for joining me tonight here on LA Talk Radio. If you want, go to the latalkradio.com/max page. There you can get 11 years of shows. You all know the routine by now. So look it up. Have fun. Enjoy. Relax. Take a breath. It's Sunday night. The week is coming to an end. The weekend. And the week is coming to a start, or wherever you fall in that category. But one thing I know for sure, that love is contagious. And why do I say that? Because two of my besties are in the studio tonight. Jim Jordan's here, JJ, and Taja Savelle is here, and she's going to tell us about her new book, From the Root, and we're going to talk to JJ about all of his life and his kidnapping and all that, so you don't want to go anywhere. But what I want you to do right now is get into the mood to listen to Max and Friends and just chill, relax, and take this space for you right now just to be present and just to be here right now. Remember, love is contagious, and when we're back, we're going to have a fun time here on Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Was a boy not alone.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Love is Contagious. That was like TBS Throwback Sunday here, because that is the jam, and that was the jam, and that's just one of those jams that you need to all just get into your consciousness, because when you realize that love is contagious, then maybe that's what you're going to give out some more, because things are contagious, and love is one of them. So let love be the reason why you want people to be contagious to you. With that said, Jim Jordan is here tonight. We're going to talk about discovery. We're going to talk about the industry of modeling. We're going to talk about so many things. And without any further ado, I need that as like clapping applause. Jim Jordan, JJ, welcome to Max and Friends.
Thanks, Max.
What's going on, my friend?
What's up, my man?
Welcome to the show.
It's good to see you.
You know, I know you from Jessica, and we do the show The Polished Woman, which airs tomorrow at 1 o'clock on here, LA Talk Radio. And we won a Telly Award, and Jess is your neighbor.
Correct.
And, you know, I know you through that, but when I read this, I'm like, I should have met you like 20 years ago when I was in this cuckoo industry of modeling and everything else. So welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And, you know, it's fun to have others talk about you. But who are you?
Thank you, bro. I'm trying to figure that out still.
Isn't that the blessing?
Yeah.
Yeah. You shouldn't really know who you are at any age.
So I'm always changing. I'm different all the time.
Evolving and growing.
Always.
But so now you're in the modeling industry and you have a management company and you have... Tell us, like, there's so many facets to you, but let's get to the genesis of you.
Okay.
Did you always want to be a photographer? How did you, as a child growing up, what were you like?
I never wanted to be a photographer. I still question if I'm even a photographer, what I do.
Okay.
I never wanted to have a label as like, this is what I do and this is my badge of who I am.
Right.
I just see my life visually with everything I do, and I just use a capture as a camera as a tool just to capture what I see and feel.
So, as a child running, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Calabasas.
Oh, right, like right here.
Yeah.
So you didn't go too far.
Yeah.
You went from Calabasas to Calabasas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yet everywhere in between.
Yeah.
Was life always Calabasas, or were there some bumps in the road?
There's so many bumps in the road.
Did that pumpkin turn back to a pumpkin at midnight, the Calabasas pumpkin?
Right.
Seriously. So you were kidnapped.
I was.
What happened? If you want to talk about
That's
it.
That's a long story. I was taken from school. A strange friend of my family's, this older man. He was 7 years older than me and came into my high school in ninth grade. And came to the classroom and asked the teacher, is there Jim Jordan in the class? There was a car accident in the parking lot involving my car.
Mm-hmm.
So I came out to the hallway and I knew this person. The whole world was afraid of this guy.
Mm-hmm. And the big bully.
Yeah. And he like led me to his truck and opened the door and said, where are we going?
So where did you go?
He's like, don't ask so many questions. I went on a year and a half crazy journey with this crazy psycho killer.
Really?
Yeah.
So why isn't that like a Lifetime movie yet?
Well, it's kind of in the making.
It is. I know it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. You know, so I was kidnapped too. So we have that. There's a lot of commonalities we have here. I was kidnapped though in Europe. My mom, my sister, and I, it was like a whole big ordeal where they took my mom, my sister, and I into this, like the Bat Cave.
Yeah.
And then my father came along and, you know, was Superman, and I don't know what happened. But, you know, Italian people do Italian things sometimes. But especially when family's involved.
Yeah.
So, wow. So, okay. Now, what is this? I'm reading here, model scouting in the eighth grade.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So I was in the eighth grade. I had a friend named Tina. She's this beautiful Dutch girl. Mm-hmm. And she came home back to school on a Monday morning and said, I'm moving to Europe. I was discovered by a man named John Casablanca.
Of course.
I was shopping with my mom in Beverly Hills and... He discovered me. He's giving me a modeling contract, and I'm moving to Milan. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? You're my best friend. Like,
right.
How will I live without you? And she left, and my world was rocked, and I just was like, damn, that's a cool story I ever heard. I never heard of a man that can discover somebody and send him off to Europe and make him a supermodel.
And you've done that.
Yes.
You've become that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
who have you discovered?
I discovered Taylor Hill, supermodel, and Gigi Hadid, and Jeremy Meeks, and hundreds of other girls.
Jeremy Meeks, you know, here's the commonality that you might not know between us. So when I was like around that same age, eighth grade or so, I was working with a woman named Beth Bolt. You know Beth, who discovered Naomi Campbell.
No.
And she owned Bolt Agency in London. Long story short, Beth is like, come with me, let's do photos. Like, I want you to be my assistant, my assistant. I said, photography assistant, let's do it. Like, I had nothing going on in school, and I was like, this isn't for me. I knew that at a young age. So I like started traveling with Beth and just loving this industry. Started doing photography. Then I started doing a woman's fashion collection. Then I started doing discovering. And my recent discovery is Fatu, who you know and see. And she's walking New York shows like a couple weeks ago and covers of magazines and everything. So your best friend ends up going to Milan.
Right.
Did you follow her?
I did.
And?
I eventually did.
And what happened?
I got a little business card with my name, Jim Jordan, my phone number, and I'd skateboard and hitchhike to all the schools during their lunch break, and I'd walk in, I'd go, hey, I'm a model scout, I think you'd be a model, I'd love you to have your mom and dad call me. So I got my next door neighbor had a camera, and I'd bring, say, I'm having this girl come over, you're going to take pictures of her, mm-hmm. and we'd grow weed in the backyard and smoke.
And have fun.
And hang out, we are BFFs. And he thought he was going to be getting laid, me bringing all these girls over. And they were like 14-year-old girls with their moms standing over him. He's like, dude, I'm over this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not doing this. Fifth, sixth model I brought to him. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm giving you my camera. I can't do this for you anymore. So I took my camera, and I didn't have to wait for him or ask anybody. So mm-hmm. I was on a roll, like, scouting tons of girls and guys, bringing to my mom's garage. I'd shoot pictures in front of a white wall, and
that's all it took.
That was it.
This whole pay the person is such a scam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about becoming a fashion photographer, because you've shot for Vogue, Elle Marie Claire, Vanity Fair, and the list goes on and on and on. And everyone from, I mean, the list here in front of me is like Charlize Theron, Leo DiCaprio, Rita Wilson, Logan Paul, Jake Paul I interviewed during Sundance. I have to get you that thing, because I don't think you have our red carpet Sundance moment, but I know you want it. And then Zendaya, you've been like all over the place. And of course the Hadids and the whole thing. When did you realize that your mind, your vision, your eye is being put on covers? Like, how did that feel when you saw your first cover for you?
Dude, it was crazy. Like, the voices in my head were mm-hmm. always telling me one thing, and like the world would show me something else.
Mm-hmm.
So the thoughts of who I thought I was and how I saw myself
mm-hmm.
wasn't really what the response I got.
So how did you see yourself?
I heard voices in my head constantly telling me, my family's not supportive, I'm not rich enough,
mm-hmm.
how can I be with Herb Ritz and Peter Lindbergh and the biggest photographers every day
mm-hmm.
and pretending that I was going to jump into a lane like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
so
like,
what motivated you to do it?
I used to take pictures of all the models on J. Crew shoots and hide all my photos, and all the models
really?
Would tell, like the owner of J. Crew used to have me stand next to the photographer mm-hmm. and direct the shoots.
Wow.
So they were like, why don't you just have him shoot for you? And Emily, the owner, is like, he doesn't shoot.
Wow.
They're like, he does, but he doesn't tell anybody, because I was afraid to be critiqued, and I was mm-hmm. afraid for people to look at my photos.
And then the validation of your cover was like the world saying, I hear you, I see you, you matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Did your career take off from there?
It did actually, but I was super afraid to like go down that road.
Really?
And the owner of J. Crew, Emily, was like, dude, it's time for you to lay down your brushes and go get an agent in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there's no way. I have so many great clients. I shoot with all the biggest photographers, and I love my job, and I make a ton of money, and I work with the biggest superstars.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to say goodbye to all my celebrities that I have these amazing relationships with?
Yeah.
And so I did a job for J. Crew. They were like, gave me my first job, and they called me in. And they're like, we're going to pay you $200 for every image we use, and we're going to take you to Hawaii for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Hawaii. I shot like 6,000 rolls of film that 10 days
mm-hmm.
and came into the J. Crew office like a month later, and all my photos were all over the wall.
Wow.
And they were like, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ah.
Yeah, come a little closer.
I was super like beside myself.
I can imagine. So, all right, now you're this industry, because I know it so well as well. It's like it's a roller coaster of emotions. It's all energy and motion, just going here and there. And the roots of who you are is fascinating. That you didn't think things were going to line up, did you?
No, not at all.
No, and then they do.
Yeah,
just naturally. But then there was, speaking of naturally, there was a near death experience.
Yeah,
is that a natural occurrence? But what happened? Because it was pretty serious, wasn't it?
I was in Las Vegas doing a guest speaking as a guest speaker for Canon cameras, and mm-hmm. I was in Vegas living the life, traveling constantly, and
mm-hmm.
I got up there and I was really sick. I don't know, I thought I had food poisoning, and I ended up so sick, and I raced back to LA. I was up all night, like throwing up, just crazy.
Going through it.
Dying, feel like I was dying. My assistant came in the morning, I couldn't get out of my bed, I couldn't walk. picked me up, put me in the car, took me to the hospital. They did all these tests, and the doctor came in and he said, your kidneys are failing,
mm-hmm.
and you're a diabetic. How long have you been a diabetic? I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm not a diabetic, and why mm-hmm. am I? I thought I was so sick you could live without your kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, goes and runs and calls my family from Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sick. When you're that sick, you just want to die, and your mind kind of shuts down, mm-hmm. so you're not really afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And my sisters and all my family came in. Long, I could go on for two, 3 hours about this story, but I had a miracle happen in the hospital room, and I was looking for God in every country and every religion and every culture for years.
Stay tuned. Hold that thought. Yeah. Y'all need to stay tuned, because Jim Jordan's here tonight. I want to talk about that spiritual awakening here on Max and Friends. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Max and Friends with Max Tucci right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Max and Friends right here on LA Talk Radio. JJ, Jim Jordan's in the studio with me tonight. We're talking about spiritual awakenings right now. So all of a sudden, what happens? You know, what you're looking for is looking for you. Sometimes you got to go to that near-death experience, though, to hear the knock on the door.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens?
So I was in the hospital bed, tubes, like two IVs in me, mm-hmm. oxygen mask, my whole family around me. Doctors telling me my kidneys were failing and I was a diabetic, and he didn't think I would be making it by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so my doctors came in, they were doing ultrasound, measuring my kidneys, mm-hmm. and the kidney doctor was like, your kidneys are the size of a dime and they're non-functioning. And he's like, I don't think you'll make it by 4 o'clock today. So my older sister, her and her husband are pastors of a church mm-hmm. in Santa Barbara, and I was super like against Christian people and religious mm-hmm. finger pointing people.
Mm-hmm.
I was just really non-Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and I was looking for God in every religion, culture. I used to go to Agape mm-hmm. and the Kabbalah Center. Mm-hmm. I was into everything. And my sister asked everybody to leave the room, my sister mm-hmm. and her husband. And they asked my mom and dad. My mom was crying the whole time. My brothers, they were all crying around me. And I was really numb, like I was numbing out,
mm-hmm.
feeling what was happening around me. So my sister walked out of the room. Everybody walked out. My sister and her husband came up to me, and they were like, we want you to tell us what's going on with you. And mm-hmm. I looked at my sister like I could barely talk. She goes, tell me what you know is happening right now in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the doctor said my kidneys are failing and that I'm not going to live by the end of the day today. And she looked at me and she's like, that's exactly what they're saying. And I know you're really sick and I want to make sure that you understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, if you believe that Jesus will heal you mm-hmm. with every bit of faith you have, that your mm-hmm. name is James,
mm-hmm.
God will heal you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, get away from me. Like, mm-hmm. I just was thinking to myself, ugh, like,
here's another one of those.
Don't even look at me. And they were staring at me. I was right. laying their pin and they were staring at me.
I can't go anywhere. Yeah. Right now, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me die in peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hear you.
I turned my head and I had my eyes closed and my whole life felt like it was flashing before me.
Mm-hmm.
And all the visions and that I was having and these visions that were happening
mm-hmm.
were me on my hands and knees, like in sweat lodges.
Mm-hmm.
at Kabbalah Center and mm-hmm. like going to India every year and chanting mm-hmm. and being friends with the Dalai Lama,
mm-hmm.
sitting there and trying to get a grasp on like, okay, here I am on my deathbed and I've looked my whole life for God, like,
mm-hmm.
which one are you gonna come? Like, mm-hmm. what God is gonna be here for me now? Here I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a voice say to me right in those flashes of visions of mm-hmm. me looking for God, I heard a little voice say, you have nothing else to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it pertained to what my sister said. And I knew right then it pertained to what she said.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you have nothing else to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn and I look at my sister and she's staring at me. She's like, what? And I'm like, I'm shaking my head, yes, looking at her. And she goes, what do you want to say? And I'm like shaking my head, yes, because mm-hmm. I couldn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Like my ego or my mm-hmm. was so like. She goes, what do you want to say? And I says, I'll believe that. She's like, you'll believe what? And I go, I'll believe that. And she goes, you'll believe what? And I go, believe that.
The stutter.
Like, I couldn't even say the name
right.
Jesus. And I says, I'll believe that Jesus will heal me.
Mm-hmm. And then?
So they came over me and they were like, if you need to have faith, do you know what faith is? It's something you can't see, but mm-hmm. you hope for.
Mm-hmm.
Please, you need to have faith. We're going to pray for you and lay our mm-hmm. hands on you. So they laid their hands on me. My sister and her husband start speaking in some other language. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy. And so I'm thinking my sister's speaking Italian or Latin or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's no way that she's faking this.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, I'm like, I better close my eyes because they're going to be done praying. I want to be tripping on her mm-hmm. instead of believing Jesus is going
right.
to heal me. So they got their hands laid over me. They're praying over me. And I closed my eyes, and I had no reference to Jesus
mm-hmm.
at all. I've seen stained glass windows and pictures of mm-hmm. When I ran away and I lived in Milan, I used to sleep out in the rain under mm-hmm. at this temple, and mm-hmm. in the ceiling it had all these pictures of Jesus mm-hmm. sitting with little kids around mm-hmm. him, and him pulling a guy out of the water onto a boat. And there were like the hands of God's hand reaching out, mm-hmm. that famous painting.
Right, and touching.
And I stare at these pictures every night. And I went back to that place, like that hand that was reaching out for me.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Take a moment. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Max Tucci on Max and Friends.
You're listening to Max and Friends with Max Tucci right here on LA Talk Radio.
Right here on LA Talk Radio. JJ, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good. All right. So carry on.
So I, you know, my sister said if I had faith that everything I believed that God would heal me, they mm-hmm. prayed for me. Like that was my only source right mm-hmm. then at that time. So I kept seeing this photo, this famous painting
mm-hmm.
of the hand of God reaching out to save the guy,
mm-hmm.
to reach out or pull the man out of the water that was mm-hmm. going to drown. And I felt like I was drowning and I was dying and I needed the hand of God to reach into my bed and pull me out of bed so I could live.
And here you are.
And so I was focusing on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as they were praying for me, I was focusing on that hand reaching out from heaven or wherever it was going to come from. And my whole body like started convulsing in the bed like a fish out of mm-hmm. water, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared me so bad. My body started like trembling. The bed was like,
mm-hmm.
and I opened my eyes and I held on because I thought I was dying.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was like going into convulsions and dying right then. Mm-hmm. So I held on and I looked at my sister and they weren't even flinching.
Mm-hmm.
They were like praying even harder.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, wait, maybe this has something to do with God healing my body.
Mm-hmm.
So I closed my eyes and I went right back into that vision I was having of God reaching out to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And my body went right back into convulsing again, mm-hmm. like shaking, flopping. Mm-hmm. And I just let it go. And I just like going off, flopping in the bed, closing my eyes, having faith still.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like something under the covers grabbed my feet, like mm-hmm. wrapped. It was like pressure that wrapped around my feet and it mm-hmm. started moving up my legs. And it moved all the way up my legs. It was moving up my legs and my body into my torso. And when it got over my head, it like catapulted me out of my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat up. And that second I sat up, I was like, I couldn't even lift my head off the pillow before, mm-hmm. 5 minutes before that. And I just sat up like this energy that came into my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat up.
So what do you call that energy now? Knowing what you know.
A miracle from God.
Mm-hmm.
And
for people who are listening right now who are saying this story is full of shit, because you know people say that,
yeah.
and I'm just playing real,
yeah.
what do you tell them?
I'm living proof. I'm not here to win or tell people how to think or what mm-hmm. God is to them, but what God was to me at that moment,
mm-hmm.
I was undeniable. And mm-hmm. I denied that was God for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I walked out of that hospital not believing that was God.
Yeah.
So it changed, and I doctor came back 4 hours later mm-hmm. thinking I'd be like not my dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what are you doing out of bed? I was sitting in a chair with the IVs and everything. Mm-hmm. And he said, you need to get back in. We need to get do ultrasound on you. And he got back in the bed, laid me on my stomach, did ultrasound, and he kept looking at his nurse and shaking his head. And he turned to my sisters and me and my family, and he says, what's happened in this room since I left 4 hours ago? He goes, I've never seen anything like this. And mm-hmm. he goes, we're like, well, why? And he says, when I left the room 4 hours ago, your kidneys were the size of a dime, and now they're the size of my fist, and they're functioning perfectly normal. I've never seen anything like this in 30 years. I've been mm-hmm. a doctor. And he goes, what's happened in this room?
Mm-hmm.
There's been a true miracle here. And my sister goes, my brother has an amazing healing God named Jesus. And mm-hmm. I was like, ah, stop.
Right, right.
I was still like,
right.
Oh, don't mention that. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor said that was a miracle, and I left the hospital the next day.
Wow.
Fine.
See, that's where we need that clapping button right now. That's amazing. You know, and thank you for sharing your story here.
Yeah.
I didn't think we were going to go that route, JJ.
Yeah.
That's good. It was like the Barbara Walters interview for a minute. You cried. I got it. That was good, JJ.
Yeah.
But now there's actually, you're creating your autobiography.
Yeah.
A coming of age story about walking through fear.
Yeah.
What did fear mean to you then?
Fear was, it was huge in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fearful of everything,
mm-hmm.
and fearful mostly about what the world thought about me, and mm-hmm. fearful about like being picked on as a kid and mm-hmm. bullied and being different.
Mm-hmm. And what does fear mean to you today?
Fear means something. When I'm fearful of something, it means that's the direction I need to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe that my miracle's on the other side of fear,
mm-hmm.
and that the fear is so powerful in people's lives, it wants to paralyze you and stop you in your tracks,
mm-hmm.
so you don't go toward it.
That's beautiful.
And I believe that everything I've ever feared that I went to walk through, God was on the other side of that saying, here I am.
Here I am.
And here's your miracle.
And here you are.
And
now for people who want to follow you, how can they follow you right now on Twitter and social media?
They could go to my Instagram at Jim Jordan Photography, and my management company is at White Cross Management.
That was a whole nother, you started a whole company after that, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? It's a fine place to be here right now, Max and Friends. We're going to play A Fine Place and we're back. Taj is going to join us. You're going to stay here. We're going to play some music right now and we'll be right back. I'm just Max Tucci for Max and Friends. Stay tuned. Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to the show. If you're tuning in, it's Sunday night. Where are you? Tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know what's going on in your world. Jim Jordan, thanks for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're going to stay in the studio, though, because I'm going to welcome that song, the songstress, Taja Seville, author, songstress, friend. There's just so many facets to you, my friend. Welcome to actually being here in the studio with me tonight.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here in person.
Not your first time on the show.
Not my first,
first
time.
First time your friend, second time your family. But you've been family. Like, we've been talking about this for over 20 years. We know each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember a long time ago when we were sitting on a rock in my aunt's property in Connecticut.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. And, you know, what's interesting about you, and I'm going to bring this up before we talk about all the wonderful things from The Root, your book, And you've got so many things going on. So you're gonna hang out tonight, and then you're gonna be back next week because we got so much to talk about. But back in the day, there was a movie called Lean On Me.
Yes.
And I think I told you about this. And I remember that song, and there was a verse, and there's a child, or something about a daughter and a this and a that. I don't remember right now because I'm still thinking about Jim's JJ's story. But and I was like, oh my God, that one lyric is so amazing. And I remember telling my sister, I'm like, listen to this song, but listen to that one line. Years later, I read the album cover and it's you.
That's right.
And I was like, that's so weird.
You know what's funny? I was just a dear friend of mine passed away. His name was Gary Lamell. He was the head of the soundtrack division of Warner Pictures for many years, and his memorial was yesterday at Warner Brothers. And I ran into Brooks Arthur, and he worked on that, and he was the one who was helping to get, they were trying to get one of my songs in, but I ended up singing on that song. And I had forgotten all about it, and you know, I saw him after all these years. It was really amazing. So it's trippy that you're bringing that up.
That's before I even knew you.
Yeah, wow.
Before I even knew you. And I remember that one sentence. It was like the mother and the daughter thing, right?
Yes.
And then like,
when a woman has a child before that child is
born, she is somebody.
She is somebody.
There you go. Everybody is somebody.
Everybody
there
is you somebody. Go. That's right.
All I needed was those three words to remember. But yeah, so, and I remember that. And I remember calling like across the hall. I'm like, Nikki, you have to hear this song.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then years later, I met Lisa, and then I met you. And then the rest is history. And I designed a whole collection for you when you were in Detroit. I was like 17 or 18.
For Mona.
Yeah, so we have a rich history.
Yes.
But tonight we're going to talk about From the Root, because this is your new project.
This is my new project.
And it's one that's dear to you and also a lot of people now, because you're getting some major traction from The Root. So tell us about From the Root.
Well, it's my new book. It's called From the Root, A Memoir and a Philosophy for Balance in Our World. And I was inspired to write this book. I started urban farming in Detroit, Michigan when I saw, just for those of you who may not know, when I saw all of the unused land in the city and learned about the poverty. And I was recording a CD for Sony Records, and when I started to become acquainted with it. And I put my music career on the back burner. I had obviously been recording my whole life. I got my start with Prince. That was my first record.
We're going
deal.
To the roots.
That was my
from
first,
the root.
Very first record deal, and it was funny because he offered me that deal in the same week that I was accepted into Berklee College of Music. So that was my life.
And tonight we played "Love Is Contagious," which was
the first hit off of my debut CD. And
what year was that?
We have
to talk about it, because you know why? Here's the one thing: you have longevity in this industry.
Yes.
So for me, dates are important. And that's why, because that was 19...
Well, it came out in 87, 88.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're still here doing your thing, performing, believing, finding that balance. So how did you find that balance?
Well, I'll
being
tell
in an industry where balance is something like like a roller coaster.
Well, you know, when I just want to say, when I saw what was going on in Detroit, and I put my career on the back burner to start Urban Farming. Urban Farming is an organization... It's a nonprofit. We started planting food on unused land, and the food is free for people in need. So any time of the day or night, they can come and pick the food, whether they worked in the garden or not. So I started to see, you know, a real gap of misunderstanding between various people, whether it's an affluent community, whether it's a rural community, whether it's an urban
disconnect.
A real disconnect. And different people, different religions, different races, different ages, et cetera. And I did a lot of research for this book. I researched for about 7 or 8 years. And I had 15 years of boots on the ground with urban farming.
I remember when you called me and you were first talking about urban farming.
Yeah.
So 15 years ago.
Yeah. It started with 3 gardens.
Yeah.
A pamphlet and $5,000.
Well, it started with a vision.
And a vision. A thought.
Which turned into.
Which I get into in the book. But now there are 66,000 gardens around the world that are all a part of the urban farming global food chain. And, you know, I realized that our world is very much out of balance. I talk about the fundamental root principles in this book that need to be put into balance. I give solutions of how to do that. One of the things that I talk about in the book is that in the United States alone, we're wasting $6.2 trillion of capital every single year, annually, okay, wasted capital. And some of that wasted capital is the cost of crime. That's one of the biggies. The U.S. Accountability Office has recorded that crime is costing the United States upwards of $3.4 trillion every single year. There was a study out of Iowa State University. Mm-hmm. They found that one single murder mm-hmm. cost society $17.25 million.
For one?
For one. One single murder. So I realized when we recapture and reallocate this wasted, you know, capital, we can start to see a return on investment, in abundance that we've never seen in mm-hmm. our world before. So these are the things that inspired me to write this mm-hmm. book.
And to inspire you to heal our world from the root.
Heal our world from the root.
So tell us about that campaign.
So I'm on it's a campaign to heal the world from the root. I let people know if you're voting, if you're casting a vote in the 2020 mm-hmm. election in the United States, make sure the candidate of your choice is actively, not just mm-hmm. talking about it, but actively healing our world from mm-hmm. the root. And so what are some of the
solutions?
What
does that mean?
Some of the solutions that I put forward in the book, a big one is high bonds, what I call high bonds, mm-hmm. human infrastructure bonds. Mm-hmm. So we're used to municipal bonds to, mm-hmm. you know, strengthen the physical infrastructures of ours, mm-hmm. you know, any city or rural area, the bridges, the roads, the mm-hmm. schools, et cetera. But what about the human infrastructure? So mm-hmm. human infrastructure bonds, coexistence investing mm-hmm. with public and private partnership in human infrastructure bonds. Mm-hmm. Because when we invest in the human infrastructure, that's when we can start to see the abundance that mm-hmm. we really can have in our world. And I talk about a garden, if you're a farmer, and one side of the field is just languishing and the other side is abundant, mm-hmm. you're going to get to the problem, the root of the problem, mm-hmm. because you want more yield out of your field or mm-hmm. out of your garden. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with a city. If you have one side of the town that's in chronic poverty mm-hmm. and has been so for generations, mm-hmm. then... Flint, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, mm-hmm. Newark, New Jersey. I mean, you name it. It's pretty much every city has, mm-hmm. you know, all around the world. And even in rural areas mm-hmm. Where you have industries, dying industries, like if coal miners, whatever it is, mm-hmm. Whatever industry is dying. Mm-hmm. In Leeds, you know, the industry was fabric and... Mm-hmm. and
So what are some red... For people who are voting, what are some red flags when people are at the polls? Because it's important to see what people are doing. But what are the red flags that people should know about our politicians that are worth discussing?
Well, listen, I cover healthy thinking, healthy communication, mm-hmm. healthy eating, healthy fitness, healthy mm-hmm. finances, healthy mm-hmm. education, and healthy families. The healthy thinking is the first chapter, mm-hmm. the first thing that I deal with, and mm-hmm. then healthy communication. So you can ask yourself, you can do your own mm-hmm. test within yourself and say, is this healthy communication? Mm-hmm. If I were an 8-year-old and I turned on the television mm-hmm. and I saw adults screaming at each other, mm-hmm. I would think that that's how to handle conflict.
Right.
So I'm very big on healthy communication. I studied mm-hmm. Marshall Rosenberg. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of work around the world on nonviolent communication. Mm-hmm. And he started schools. And when you go to one of his schools, kindergartners, if they start, two of them start beefing, mm-hmm. they'll immediately stop themselves. And then they'll grab a third kid, mm-hmm. go into a corner, mm-hmm. work it out, and go back to playing within mm-hmm. minutes, because they have the tools of healthy communication.
Right.
And when I learned about that, I thought, man, I mean, if we had learned that from day one, where would our world be?
Look at you disrupting patterns and pathologies one day at a time, Taja Samel. I love it here. I'm Max and Friends. So if you're all, I know we're having conversation. I forget that we're on radio because I'm just like so enthralled with this conversation. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. I'm Russ Max Tucci for Max and Friends. This is Max and Friends. I'm Max Tucci. From the Root is the book, Tajasville. You can all get the book right now. But let's talk about this button that you gave me prior to the show, which is Heal Our World.
Heal Our World.
And how do we get these?
Well, you know, you're one of the special ones right now because Woo-hoo! They're not available online. But the book is available on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's a campaign to heal our world from the root. Mm-hmm. So there are many
ways. What inspired you to do this? Like, where was the fire for to say, you know what? I need to let this light of mine shine. What was it that did it for you?
You know, I had a calling. Mm-hmm. You know, something spoke to my spirit and said, put your music career on the back burner mm-hmm. and do this. Mm-hmm. Because I saw all...
It was that clear.
I saw acres and acres of unused land in mm-hmm. the city of Detroit. And I learned about all of the people who were just... They couldn't feed their families. Mm-hmm. And I had three and a half years on a farm in my teens. Mm-hmm. I'm from Minneapolis originally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, drawing from my experiences on a farm, and originally I wanted to be a botanist before a singer, I thought to myself, why not plant food on this land? And so that's what I did. And I started to learn more and more and more and more about what the holistic, all of the mm-hmm. myriad of problems and mm. challenges and how to solve them. And because I'm very focused on the solution, I, mm-hmm. I see the problem immediately and then focus on the solution. I don't spend a lot of time on the problem. I spend a lot of time on the solution. Mm-hmm. So I put solutions forward in this book. The Haibans that I just mentioned earlier is one of them. Getting insurance companies, banks, universities, foundations, public and private partnerships together to create these human infrastructure bonds in our communities all around the world in perpetuity. That's mm-hmm. a big deal. In
right,
perpetuity.
Absolutely.
So that's one solution. Another one is, listen, if you're watching something on television or on the internet and you see people screaming at each other or engaging in unhealthy communication, turn away, turn the channel, mm-hmm. turn to something else. Feed yourself with the positive because, you know, they've done studies out mm-hmm. of Harvard, and every kind word that you speak to someone, mm-hmm. you actually enhance your immune system mm-hmm. and you enhance the immune system of the person who heard it mm-hmm. and the people around who heard it. Mm-hmm. And vice versa.
It's a vibration. It's raising the vibration.
And vice yeah. versa, if you're speaking something unkind, you've just damaged your own immune system
right.
and that of all of the immune systems of the people who heard it. So it's no joke. It's a big deal. You know, in the interview that you just did, you talked about what is that energy? What is mm-hmm. that, you know, divine energy, whatever you want to call it. But tapping into that energy mm-hmm. is the key for all of us to live in abundance. We've kept ourselves in such a box, and mm-hmm. we have hurt each other generation after generation like mm-hmm. a nightmarish game of ping pong, mm-hmm. so that we're all kind of operating from this wounded area. Mm-hmm. And once we start being supportive of each other and saying, you know, you go, mm-hmm. instead of focusing on what somebody did wrong or mm-hmm. what, you know, focus on all the wonderful things that we have in each one of us because we're all kings and queens. Once we do that, mm-hmm. we will have what it's like if you ever watched Tomorrowland. We yeah. will have amazing abundance. And, yeah. you know, let me tell you something also that's really important, because I like to bring in different spiritual, mm-hmm. quantum physics. Mm-hmm.
The whole spectrum.
And the economic argument. Mm-hmm. So there was this Towers Watson study. They revealed that companies that have healthy communicators, they pass on a 47% higher mm-hmm. rate of return to their shareholders
oh, yeah.
over a five-year period.
Did you see American Factory? It's
no.
on Netflix. You must watch it. All of you are in the studio tonight. Watch it, because it's exactly that. A Chinese billionaire came to America, started a factory here. Within 1 year, lost $40 million because of the American mentality.
Really?
Everybody complained. Everybody was miserable. And meanwhile, when they brought the Americans to the Chinese factory, everybody in the Chinese factory was like happy, even though they didn't like see their family for a year. Here, everyone would burn the place down. There, they just accepted it for what it was, and they like did life, and they were there to work to make money. And like, it was just such a duality of the American mentality. And the Chinese said the one thing about Americans is that you have to repeatedly tell them things in order for them to understand it. They work too slow and their fingers are too fat. And I was looking at this. I'm like, you know what? That's an interesting perspective, because here they are coming in to this country to work for this guy, and they're seeing all the things that the American worker complains about, instead of being in like, this was a town where there were no jobs. Everyone was going bankrupt. This was in Ohio, I think, one of the car factories closed. So he bought this car factory. And then all of a sudden, like, everyone now has a job. People are now getting money. People are now getting homes again. But yet everyone's still complaining. Right?
It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it goes back to from the root. Mm-hmm. So when I say heal the world from the root, mm-hmm. we have to heal our relationships from the root.
Right.
And when I talk about the generational, you know, back and forth, mm-hmm. until we stop and heal these relationships from the root, because every culture is...
Give us one way to start healing from the root.
Well, I start with healthy thinking.
Okay.
So healthy thinking, everything starts with a thought.
Right.
Okay. So having discipline and not being a sloppy thinker or mm-hmm. be
conscious thinker,
putting it in a different way, mm-hmm. just being aware, kind of being your own detective mm-hmm. and making sure that your thoughts mm-hmm. are constructive for you and for others. Mm-hmm. Do they serve me well, and do they serve others well? It mm-hmm. has to be both.
Right.
And really becoming disciplined in that area is one way that we can all start. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are other things. We can petition our schools and say, we want healthy communication in our schools, in our workplaces, in our media. Mm-hmm. We can change things so rapidly. I just want to say something.
Say
when I started urban farming, I didn't have a trust fund and, you know, a bunch of royalties. I'd have $5,000 in a pamphlet and three mm-hmm. gardens, okay? But we created a global tipping point. Mm-hmm. How did we do that? We started partnering public and private partnerships. Mm-hmm. One of our largest was with Kraft and the Triscuit cracker.
I remember, yeah.
Okay? When I was on Good Morning America and they called me that afternoon and they said, listen, can you plant 100 gardens around the United States? I said, sure, okay? We ended up planting 65 gardens around the United States. We were on Ellen, mm-hmm. and Ellen put a garden on the set of her show and promoted what we did all summer. We were on the back of 28 million boxes of the Triscuit cracker.
Right.
And it created a tipping point because gardeners and community gardens had not received that kind of attention. We had mm-hmm. like over 30,000 media stories since the World War II Victory Gardens
right.
or the World War I Liberty Gardens.
Right, right.
So it taught me how quickly things can change when, especially when you have these public and private partnerships, mm-hmm. Because that campaign taught the whole messaging was getting back to the roots, getting back to the basics, mm-hmm. learning how to plant your and grow your own food, mm-hmm. and it had a major impact on the world mm-hmm. quickly.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is some pie in the sky thing that we can't have and we can't ever have.
You did it.
We can have a world where we are supportive of each other, where we are loving to mm-hmm. each other, where we recognize that everyone has unique gifts mm-hmm. and that we help bring them all to life. Because mm-hmm. once they all start coming to life, mm-hmm. imagine what we'll have. It'll yeah. be amazing.
It is amazing.
It is.
Because it's happening.
It's
and you
happening.
Know what I love about the garden too is that, you know, if there's like one squash in the garden, another squash in the garden, those squashes don't look at each other and say, you ugly.
That's right.
They just grow together in harmony.
Exactly.
Like the trees here, that tree is shorter than the taller one, but they don't judge each other. And there's a harmony in the growth of that garden.
Let me tell you about a great book that I just read.
Will you stay and with me for next week's
sure.
show? And we could talk about it then.
Yes, I will.
Because, you know, the illusion of time is upon us. And we got to wrap this show up. So, but you'll stay here. Well, yeah. And we'll continue the conversation. All right. Stay here. Stay tuned. I love you all for tuning in tonight for Max and Friends. From the Root is the book. Go get it now. JJ, when is your book coming out? Are you still working on it?
Next June.
Next June.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be Gemini. Yes. And Taja, where can people find you?
Amazon,
the book. And you personally?
Taja Savelle from the Root or TajaSavelle.com.
And on Instagram? Are you on Instagram?
Yep, but you can get all that on my website.
Which is TajaSavelle.com.
TajaSavelle.com.
And JJ, you're Jim Jordan Photography, right?
Jim Jordan Photography.
And you've got a lot posting. You post like every single day.
Yeah, I try to.
You are busy nonstop. I'm grateful that you had a moment to stop by here on Max and Friends.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you, buddy.
I know people are listening tonight like, well, I want to know more about him. Well, you're going to find out more about him. Because there's a movie coming out, right? And the book. All right. Taja, you're staying here. Jess is going to be here next week. And we're going to talk about the book you read. We're going to talk about more about your book, From the Root. We're going to talk about more of your music because we didn't get to play so much of it tonight. And tell me one thing.
And a TV show that I wrote that Montel Williams is hosting.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that I know.
All about that.
Yeah. All right. I know I got to go. I love you all for tuning in. And listen, for this week, Taja, what do you want people to take with them into this week?
I want them to take that every word you speak is having an effect on our world.
And what do you want people to take with them, JJ?
To run to your things you're afraid of most, to run.
Beautiful. And from what I want you all to take with you into this week is take a moment just to be still and to be grateful for who you are in this present moment. Because you're not defined from what you were or who you're going to be or any of that. Just be grateful you're you. And take that into this week knowing that you're beautiful. And that everyone around you is beautiful too. So acknowledge your beauty in everyone this week. So look at someone, smile at them, and tell them you're beautiful. I love you all for tuning in. I'm your host, Max Tucci from Max and Friends. I can wrap this up really quick. Love you. Stay tuned. Good night.